What's up? Welcome back to Kingdom Refresh.
That was a little too sensual for my taste.
I feel like I turned into like the, I don't know, like Blade Runner. Like, hello and welcome.
There's that scene in Batman Returns where they're counting down. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, you don't care.
Five.
None of you cares. Four.
Three.
It's always on my mind.
Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking.
So this past week we had a sermon called Controlled Burn. Talking about burning things, right?
Controlled burn. Yeah. I mean, it's like when you want to insult somebody, but you do it very tactfully. That's a controlled burn.
Or you don't.
Or you don't. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not.
Or you keep the fire in your mouth.
Yeah, you know, it, especially in wildfire areas, people, the firefighters will go in, they'll burn the area on purpose, and then control it within the area. So they call it a controlled burn. So it looks scary, but it's completely under control.
Yeah, well, around here too, that's like a field. You do it with fields a lot of times, mm-hmm. Which, I mean, we're in like, I don't know if we currently are when this is showing, but we're in like a burn ban again in Carville.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the high winds and dryness and stuff. It was like last weekend, like I heard three or four different fire trucks, and it was like field fire, barn fire, field fire, oh, wow. You know, just like.
Yeah, barn fires especially, I would imagine, would be a big deal. Our neighbor was burning this morning. You could just see the smoke, you know, going across. But so the idea is that, you know, when you look around and you see fires all over the world, you know, Israel and Hezbollah, there's a big burn over there, you know, Hurricane Milton, all these things that are really scary. But then when you realize they're all controlled burns, God is sovereign. Mm-hmm. He is coming back and he's not causing them to burn, but he's in control of it. And so whatever we are worried about, God's not worried about. He's not pacing his throne. He's seated on his throne. And so how do we live in light of that, you know?
Yeah. What does it mean to be patient while waiting for the Lord's return? And how can we live with purpose in the waiting?
The word for patience, we talked a little bit about Macrothumos, which sounds like a Marvel character.
Yeah. Macrothumos has come again.
It sounds like it, you know? But macro being long or big or overview, ongoing, and then thumos is tempered, or also the word used for suffering. So long suffering. So it says be long suffering. It doesn't mean to constantly be given to suffering and debilitated by suffering, but it means to suffer long means to endure, you know, there's a sense of endurance there. And the book actually opens, you know, James actually opens up with endurance. He says, let your endurance grow and you'll be fully and complete, lacking nothing. And now at the end of the book, he's talking about long suffering, you know, patience, because it takes endurance to be patient. And so there's a common theme all throughout the book of James where he's like, watch what you say, watch your tongue, watch your influence, don't fight, suffer well. Oh, okay. And then he goes on, oh, suffer well, be long-suffering. Oh, consider it joy when you face trials. You know, he's assuming that in life we're going to constantly be in suffering. I think I mentioned it. We put it up in a reel too, but it's, you know, suffering's not a line graph where it's things are going good, things are going bad, things are going good, things are going bad. Suffering is a 3D model. Things are going good while things are going bad, and there's overlays to life. You can, a great example would be like a new baby is born, right? And this beautiful child has come into the world, but then also maybe a grandparent has died at that same year. You're still grappling with the tragedy of losing somebody you love, but also the joy of a new baby in the world. They don't cancel each other out. They just exist in the same space, and there's plenty of space for them to exist. And so to be long-suffering is to enjoy life while being patient for what's coming, you know. That's a hard thing to do, especially when you're chasing something, like the next thing is always on your mind, right? Mm-hmm. So I had a baby. Oh my gosh, I haven't slept. I can't wait till this season's over so I can sleep. But then it's like, hey, you're going to miss the baby season.
Yeah.
You know? So suffer well, you know, suffer the lack of sleep, but enjoy the cuddles, you know? This morning I woke up and I was getting ready to come to church. And my wife reminded me, she's like, you know, you've been at church 16 days in a row. I was like, oh. And my daughter was in the bed and she comes over to me and she goes, Dada. And she's like, ha ha, because I'm usually not around when she wakes up. And she's laughing. She's all excited. And I said, yeah. And she goes, knuck, knuck, which means cuddle. She says, knuck, knuck. And so I did. And we both fell asleep, you know. And it was like this nice moment. So if I were to just be like, oh, I'm late. I need to get to work. And, oh, this is, I got all this stuff to go on. Instead, just enjoying the knuck-knuck, you know. Sounds funny.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, like, as far as patience goes, it's gotten harder. Because, you know, I remember as a kid, you're sitting there, you know, trying to log into the internet, right? And the dial-up screen is there.
Yeah.
And you're like, come on! But now it's like two, like if it takes like more than 1 second to load a web page, you're like,
people click away.
Yeah. Or, you know, like Amazon, right? It's like, dude, it's not here in 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yep. Used to be 7 to 14 business days might come, you know, like you don't have tracking. It's just going to, eventually it's going to show up.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's gotten harder for us to be patient. But I think the biggest part of that is the living with purpose while we're doing it. Like, what can we do now while we're waiting? You know, if you are sitting in a waiting room for something and you're just sitting there twiddling your thumbs, you know, you could be being productive in some way, right? Whether that's doing something, talking with someone, whatever. You know, so it's that idea of while we're waiting, why not do something? Why not, you know, like make a point to step into, some form of thing. So the idea of, you know, while we're waiting for the return, then you have, you know, like, okay, well, let's serve others around us. Right. Cause we can do that. Or let's grow. Let's do things together. You know, instead of just being like, well, I mean, yeah, he's going to come at some point. So, I mean, I might as well just chill, right?
Like, it's like the watch pot never boils kind of thing.
Yeah.
I love, like, in a busy week, especially when there's something fun happening at the end of the week. If the week is busy, it just flies by like that. And then you're finally to the fun thing, you know? It's like, yeah, and that's what Paul says in the First Thessalonians, you know, while you're waiting, you know, work with your hands, add to society, make it to where you don't need anything from other people, and that nobody looks at you and thinks, wow, they're such a drain, but you're adding value, you know, you're salt and light, you know, you're illuminating and you're preserving and you're adding value and taste and flavor, you know, and that's how we should live.
Yeah. In what ways can we be tempted to kind of look up or focus on signs of Christ's return while ignoring the work God has for us today? And how do we balance hope for the future with our present responsibilities?
It's an interesting thing to be excited for Christ's return, but I was discussing this with my dad the other day. In Matthew 24, Jesus is speaking about the future, right? And he says, you know, when you see these things, these are the beginning of birth pains, and get, you know, get ready is basically what he's saying. But then he says, no man knows the day or the hour. Not even the angels know the day or the hour. And then he says, not even the Son knows the day or the hour. Only the Father knows the day or the hour. Yet, there's a subculture of Christians that are fixated on the day and the hour.
That's my favorite thing, is it's like, it's going to happen on November 20th. Well, it's not going to happen then.
Yeah. Right. And this will be, hang with me for a second, because so October 7th, there was an attack on Israel. People were murdered brutally. Kids, people were taken captive. Terrible, terrible things happening in the world. And I saw online and in communities, the reaction of Christians was excitement. And I was like, what are they excited about? There's nothing to be excited. This is a tragedy. This is what we should be mourning. God doesn't like this. Their excitement was, they immediately went to an eschatology place, end times place. Eschatology just means study of end times, or end things, I should say. They immediately went to, Israel's being attacked. Yes! Well, hold on. Yes, it's excited. You should be excited for Christ's return. But again, no man knows the day or the hour. The angels don't know. The Son doesn't know. Only the Father knows. So don't fixate on the wrong thing when something wrong is happening, right? Mm-hmm. The immediate response to these people have died is prayer, sorrow, weeping with those who weep. I pray they knew the Lord. Pray for at the end peacefully, all that stuff. And then, if it is a sign of the times, self-examination, trepidation in a godly way, fear in a godly way, because wait a minute, if the day is drawing near, I'm going to take stock of my life. But there's a tendency of Christians to be like, just get me out of here. Just get me out of here. Well, guess what? The word church in Greek is ekklesia. It means the called out ones. He's already gotten you out of here. You are not of this world, right? You are in the world, but not of the world. You are salt and light. You are the called out ones. He's called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. He's not, that doesn't start with a trumpet blast. That starts with repentance and the words of Jesus, it is finished. The Tetelestai, it's accomplished. We're in, you know, the kingdom is right now and not yet. So live in the kingdom. And when something terrible happens in the kingdom, don't let it excite you to think that it's time to go to the next thing, but let it incite you to say, where am I not ready? And who am I not bringing with me? You know?
Yeah. Like don't, you know, the balance part, don't neglect your responsibilities. Don't neglect the things that God has called you to, because you believe it's, you know, I think of, you know, some of these people that have claimed that this is the date, and people have quit their jobs mm-hmm. and done all this stuff because they didn't need it anymore. And then the next day comes and they're like, oh.
Yeah. Y2K. Remember Y2K?
Yeah. I mean that.
People were freaking out and people were like selling their properties and selling off. There was a massive stock sell off around Y2K and nothing happened.
Yeah. And then it's like, well, what do I do now? We shouldn't stop living because it's coming at some point, because all that does is puts us in a posture of we're not following through with what we're supposed to do. How can the metaphor of a controlled burn help us understand the trials we face today? And in what ways can we find peace in knowing that God is in control of the fires?
The scriptures say that when you are tested, God will not allow you to be tested beyond your ability to persevere in his strength. When you're tested, so you're going to be tested, God's not going to burn your life down. He's not going to allow your life to be burned down. He is rest in turmoil. He is peace. He is joy and hope and all of these things. So, and don't get me wrong, a controlled burn doesn't mean God is burning your life down. It means that there are parts of your life that need to be refined, and God will not allow the wrong parts to be burned. Like when there's a controlled burn next to my house, they're not going to come anywhere near the house. They're going to wet it down. They're going to make sure they even dig ditches so where it can't jump and stuff like that. They're completely ready and prepared to only burn the areas that need to be burned. And so sometimes that's what it happens. You know, your faith is being refined like precious gold, even though your faith is more precious than gold. Mm-hmm. There is a refining aspect to it. And sometimes we'll feel the burn, we'll feel the heat, and we'll think, oh, bad, get away. Well, not always bad. Sometimes it's necessary for growth. Sometimes it's necessary for flourishing. You know, a purging fire in a jungle or a forest allows new life to come.
Yeah. What is the importance of patience during times of suffering, and how can the examples of the prophets and Job encourage us when we face difficult circumstances?
Oh, think about Job, because he specifically mentions Job. Well, he mentions the prophets, which, if you recall, many of the prophets were not particularly liked because they're saying stuff that nobody wants to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Jeremiah, he was considered the depressed prophet. The weeping prophet, they called him, because there was just so much sorrow in his soul and the lot that he had in life that the Lord placed on him to constantly be warning his people. That's a hard one. And he was like 22 years old. So it's like this young guy having to come out, you know, that's a hard thing. So that was like, And he didn't really ever get to see it to fruition like we get to see it, right? Now, obviously, he's got an eternal perspective. Think about Moses wandering in the desert with the Israelites. That takes a lot of patience, right? And then in an instance, he just does the wrong thing. Instead of speaking to the rock, he strikes the rock and usurps God's glory, and then he's not able to enter the promised land. And it's like, wow. Womp,
you know? Yeah, this thing that you so long hoped for.
Mm-hmm. And so there's, I mean, the Old Testament is littered with prophets and people who speak on behalf of God that actually never got to see on a human level the fruit of the labor and their patience. Mm. But in the overarching theme of God's kingdom, you see it now, you know. Job, God blessed the latter part of Job's life more than the beginning part, yet he still had to live with what he had lost. Again, suffering's 3D. It's not linear. So patience sometimes isn't waiting for alleviation of your pain. It's waiting to see how your pain worked out for the good.
Yeah. And I think we forget that a lot because, you know, you have the scripture that says like God works everything for the good, like for your good. You know, it's like that. A lot of times when we read that, we go, it's, oh yeah, for my good. It's like, no, it's for your good, not your want or mm-hmm. not for, it's for your not, good.
You don't define good.
Yeah. And so, you know, especially when you're going through a trial, you're like, man, why am I going through this? And a lot of times, you know, we get the, well, you know, God put you in this situation so that you could, and it's like, well, that's not always the case, but what you can be assured of is that God will use that to,
mm-hmm.
for the good of those around you and for your good. And so your circumstance, whether you were put in that by God or you or some other something, doesn't matter. It's the after, the how is God going to use that thing in your life, that thing that absolutely destroyed you, to be an example of his faithfulness within others' lives, mm-hmm. and, you know, allowing yourself to be open to talking to people about it and things like that, because there will be someone that has dealt with that or will deal with that, mm-hmm. That you are an onlooker from the other side going, I know it doesn't feel good right now, but when you get over the bridge, it'll be better.
Yeah.
You know,
I think a lot of Christians, there's like the fair weather Christians, you know, and once they hit a hardship, once you hit a hardship, you kind of realize whether or not you've surrendered to God or merely subscribed to God.
Mm.
Right? Because, like, if you surrender to God, you're given over to it. No matter what happens to you, you're like, well, I've surrendered. He's in control, and I'll roll with it. But a lot of people will just, like, turn on subscription. Like, everything's good. My business is flourishing. My wife's happy. Everything's good. And then it's like, well, I don't like this season of life.
Yeah.
This third season has really fallen off. The writer, whatever's going on there, unsubscribe. You know, I'm going to go and do something else, right? Mm. Like, we just canceled our Disney Plus subscription, and a tear rolled down my face because they raised their prices. And we're just like, no. And so we, for that same price, we're going to actually buy a Disney movie. So we own it, you know, whatever. But you shouldn't view your faith in that way. You know, it's like, ooh, the price is a little high this time.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to a different platform, you know?
Yeah.
It's complete surrender.
Well, I just thought, like, you know, the, like, get away from me, I never knew you. Like, be like, but I clicked notifications. I said get notifications. Yes.
Yeah, I got notifications. Yeah, I turned on the bell. I hit the like button.
I clicked the bell. You told me to get the bell.
Yeah.
As you said earlier, Middle East is currently experiencing significant unrest and turmoil. How can we as followers of Christ react with hope and peace in the face of this global instability, knowing that Jesus is still reigning?
That's another thing that I don't like about, I don't know what are we going to call them? I don't like about end time sensationalists. Yes. Is that even a word? I don't know. Sensationalists. Sure. People who sensationalize everything that happens as if it's end times, because people will say stuff like, well, the Bible said things would get even worse, right? I'm like, yeah, but let's take a chill pill for a second and look back to early church, 300 AD, 450 AD. Look at, like, the heavy, heavy persecution in the church, people being burned at dinner parties, people being tortured to death to recant Christ. Things were exceedingly more terrible by way of persecution back then. And so to be excited that things are getting worse means the church is not doing what the church has been called to do, salt and light.
Yeah.
Like, more salt and more light should mean more light in the world and more preservation of good. And there's been ebbs and flows of that all throughout, especially in America, all throughout American history. And so a lot of us might have a defeatist personality where it's like, well, we knew it was going to get worse, but God wins in the end. I'm like, yeah, God won on the cross. That's when he won on the cross. And so there's people and there's unrest in the world, don't have a defeatist mentality and over-sensationalize and say, oh, well, things are bad. If things are bad, things are bad. We should respond with prayer. We should respond with whatever wherewithal we've been given as Christians to be salt and light, you know, whether that's voting or serving or raising our kids in the right mindset or adopting refugee kids or bringing people in here, whatever the Lord's put on your heart, instead of, well, there's nothing I can do and God said things are going to get bad, so what's on TV? You know, yeah. No. More prayer. If my people which are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face, then I will hear from heaven, forgive their sins and heal their land. You know, that's the urging of God in the face of turmoil. In fact, in 2 Chronicles 7, when that is uttered, it's during the construction of the temple, right? Solomon's temple. And there's turmoil in the world. Solomon's, you know, if you read the Old Testament, there's always nations coming up against Israel. There's always things happening right there. And what is God's response in the building of the temple? If my people, which are called by my name, it starts with you. If you're one of God's, you know, chosen, if you're one of God's people, humble yourself, pray, seek his face. So anytime there's turmoil in the world, there's attacks on Israel, there's unrest in the Middle East, Ukraine, all that kind of stuff. The first response is, if my people will call upon my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways. Turn from your wicked ways, you know. Take stock. Wow, that's really terrible what's happening over there. What am I doing that's terrible as well, you know? How am I not helping the situation? Am I raising the temperature on rhetoric online, or am I turning from my wicked ways, seeking his face and praying? I don't know if that answered the question, but
for me, a lot of times, you know, my first instinct with all of the end times talk is, you know, now we have a 24-hour news cycle. We have pretty much everyone has access to the internet. And so, you know, we're a lot of times, I feel like, especially on things like TikTok and things like that, we're seeing bombings before the news is even there.
Yeah, you know? Interesting.
Because there's people on the ground that are filming it. And you know, it's like, okay, but, and this might be a hot take, but I think a lot of the times when we respond in the way we do about the come quickly, like things like that, I think we're responding out of fear, not out of peace, because we're looking at this idea of like, I am fearful for what's to come. I don't want to be here when it happens. And I don't know if anyone sees it that way necessarily when they're doing it, but I think that we're responding fearfully, knowing that the world is going to get worse or whatever. But again, you know, like I've done quite a bit of study, in the area of eschatology and things like that, 'cause I was really interested in it in high school. And, you know, Scripture talks about things that are so much worse than what we're, you know, like the entire earth covered in blood, like things like that, where you're like, there's no way that we're there yet, you know? And so for me, when I see it, I'm like, if you're scared now, you don't know what's coming. But also, we should be at peace, and all it should do is push us to be more fervent and more, you know, like headstrong, and let's go to the world. Let's do this. Stop hiding in our little holes, and let's actually reach out to the people in our communities, reach out to those around us, reach out to the churches that we're, connected with, reach out to the people that we know, because all it should create is more urgency of, you know, and the problem is the only answer you have is we're closer today than we were yesterday. You know, that's the only answer.
And it's always true.
Yeah.
We are closer to the Lord's return than ever before now. And then 5 seconds from now.
And so then you're like, okay, well, I should probably do something about it. Right. Like that's my only response is to say, okay, let's do something about it, because
and Paul told us what to do.
Yeah.
You know, go back and read 1 Thessalonians.
Yeah. Because if it's tomorrow, I'm screwed, because there's so many people that I would like to, you know, I hope it's not tomorrow, because, you know, and that's why when we say things like come quickly, it's like, you should be like yearning, your heart should be hurting going, I don't want it to come quickly because I have not done all I'm supposed to.
Yeah. The come yeah. quickly means is a way to say, I long for Christ.
Yeah.
I long for that closeness that can only come when he comes to judge and gather us to him. And so, you know, because the scripture said, even so, come quickly, Lord Jesus. Even so, come quickly, Lord Jesus. It's we basically, even so, we long for you, but we're faithful while we're waiting. But we will still long for you. It's a longing that can't be quenched in the same way that it can be once we reach that day.
Isn't there a like a Casting Crown song or something where it's like, I will serve you where I'm waiting.
Oh, yeah. Praise you. Why does everybody have to put on the voice? Sound like Jeremy Camp or whatever. Jeremy like they got marbles in their mouth when they're singing.
Yeah, Third Day.
Dude, Third Day, Hooting the Blowfish.
James 5:9 warns us against grumbling. How does a grumbling spirit hinder our witness for Christ, especially in times of waiting?
That walks hand in hand with those folks that are just like doom posting, you know?
Yeah.
Some people, man. Well, like you said, you can see videos of bombings and stuff like that. And I'll see that. People will share a bunch or add them to the stories. And I'm like, Jesus is coming. And like, looks like bombs are coming to me. Like, dude, I saw that. You mentioned this. There was a family in like a bomb shelter together, and you just hear like all over it, super loud. And they're Christians, and they're singing, "All my life you have been," and they're just singing louder and louder as these bombs are falling all over. And the kids are like worshiping, and you're just like, "Yeah, that's cool, man."
Yeah. And you're like, I don't know if that'd be my response, but
it's just so cool. So you know, that's what you want to do. That's what you want to be caught doing.
Yeah. Well, we are so quick to grumble a lot of times. I mean, my food's cold. Like, I mean, that is a form of grumbling. Like, and you know, it's a lot of times what it does specifically in this regard is you're showing either discontent or lack of trust.
That's why I like to scroll Carlinville Talk of the Town just to get some positivity in my life.
Yeah. Don't search gate.
gate.
Yeah. The Loveless Gate.
Oh really? There's like a whole thing there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'll have to look that up later. How does being heavenly minded make us more useful for God's purposes on earth?
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's playing off of, oh, they're so heavenly minded. They're no earthly good. They're all just focused on their head in the clouds and this thing that might not come for 1,000 years. But because there's an urgency, there's always an urgency. If God's coming to judge, and you have people in your life that you don't want to be judged in that way, it should cause you to want to take as many people with you as possible, you know? And it says in the scripture, you know, he's not being slow as some count slowness. He's being patient, long suffering for your sake. He doesn't want anyone to perish. And so that should be our response too. If we're going to echo the heart of Jesus, is to go, okay, he's not back. That means there's something for me to do.
Yeah, not letting the little earthly things take over, you know, because when you talk about heavenly minded, it's like, you know, you're thinking eternal, like you're not thinking today. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I've got issues today, but in the grand scheme of things, those aren't going to matter as much as eternity. And how can I, so how can I use that to make a difference today? Not.
You know, Simon Sinek, you ever heard? He's like one of those leadership podcast guys. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's like, he does the golden circle. You know, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. You know, he kind of coined that phrase. Mm-hmm. He talks about this thing called the infinite mindset and the difference between Microsoft and Apple and why Apple is so successful in doing things that Microsoft also does, but Apple just tends to win at it. He did an event where he spoke at Microsoft, and then they gave him a Zoom. You remember the Zoom?
Mm-hmm.
It was their answer to the iPod, and he got the Zoom, and he's like, "Holy cow, this thing's superior to the iPod in every way. Look at it's just it works better. I like it. It sounds better. Like it does more things and sound. Wow, this is insane." So then a few weeks later, he goes, and let me back up. Microsoft goes, yeah, this is our answer to the iPod and all this kind of stuff. We're going to, you know, he's like, wow, great job. Well, then he goes and gets in a limo with an Apple executive and he goes, hey, check this out. He goes, this is what your competitors are doing. Like, look how great this is. And he said, he looked at it and went, oh yeah, that is really great. They're doing a great job. And that was it. And he's like, hold on, what's going on here? He thought when he showed him this thing, they would go, what? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we've got to switch everything up.
He says, no, because here's the difference. Microsoft had a finite mindset. They needed to beat Apple at what they were doing today. Apple had an infinite mindset. They've moved beyond iPods. They're like, oh, great. Yeah, they made a better iPod, but we're making an iPhone. And they knew in 10 years they're going to have an iPhone and these things will be obsolete. They're going to lead the charge because they have an infinite mindset. Same thing happens in Christianity. It's like if we have an eternal mindset, we know what's coming is better than what's here. And we know that our future is secure. So when somebody comes and brings you a better iPod and says, check this out. That person over here has got a way better job than you. They're doing way better in life and stuff like this. I'm like, yeah, but they have no peace. They don't have the hope of heaven. That's what I care about. I want them to know God's peace. Like, yeah, they have a better iPod, but I got an iPhone waiting, you know. Mm-hmm. It's having an infinite mindset. And those are the companies that constantly are innovating. Those are the companies that are constantly moving forward. And if you want to be moving forward in your faith, have an infinite mindset. So have the mindset of I'm going to heaven, but I'm going to take as many people with me. And I'm going to be as faithful as possible. Cause what does Christ say? Well done, good and successful. No, he didn't say that. He goes, well done, good and faithful servant. You know, faithfulness is all that you can give. Faithfulness is not a qualifier for anything more, but it's always a requirement for something more. People think that, oh, I was faithful and I didn't get what I wanted. It's like, I've worked at this job for 20 years. It's like, yeah, great. You met the requirement. You were faithful. It doesn't qualify you for anything, but I'll tell you this much. It is required of you to get to the next step. You know, yeah. God will be the one that brings the increase, brings the result.
The last verse we talked about, James 5:12, encourages us to be straightforward with our words. How does living with integrity and simple honesty in our communication reflect God's nature?
I mean, God always tells the truth. He says in Numbers that he's not a God that would lie. What he says will come to fruition. He never says anything that he doesn't mean. It's so like us to be like fake, you know, to put on a persona so people like us, but they're not really liking us. Dude, I saw this crazy thing about Jim Carrey. And I don't know if you follow Jim Carrey lately, but he's like, he's kind of has like a nihilist kind of like, nothing matters. I don't exist. And everybody's like, this guy's crazy. I'm like, no, I don't think he is. He went on an interview and he basically said, you know, everybody wants me to be a certain way because I'm Jim Carrey. He's like, Jim Carrey was just another character I was playing.
Yeah.
That's not the real me. It's just the me that people saw. The Mask was a character. You know, Ace Ventura was a character. Jim Carrey was a character. All that fun stuff I did, that wasn't me. And it's like, wow, that's crazy. And it's interesting to me that the word hypocrite means actor, right?
Hmm.
So many of us are living lives as a Jim Carrey as if that's our real selves. In reality, that's not our real selves at all. It's just the selves that we want to purvey to the world in order for them to like us more. But newsflash, man, being a Christian isn't always going to get you liked. Hmm. You know, being a Christ follower, Jesus says, blessed are the persecuted. You should expect persecution. Why? Because you're weird. You should be weird. Like, what you do is weird. If you fit into culture and you don't look anything like any different than culture, there's a problem there, right?
Yeah, and I feel like we all the time put on some form of face because, you know, it's that, and it's the same. I remember watching the video and I remember looking at the comments and a lot of people are like, can somebody check on him?
Yeah.
You know, cause you think about, you know, people like Robin Williams and, Chris Farley and, gosh, you know, like, and then you're like, is who I am the person that I portray,
mm-hmm,
or is who I am someone completely different?
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes to the thing of, so for Jim Carrey, you know, he's like, everyone wants me to be Jim Carrey, but that's not who I am. So who knows the real him, mm-hmm, you know? And I feel like that's the hard thing is, you know, like, are you portraying being a Christian and you have everything together, or are you being yourself? Are you being real? You know, I remember having conversations with some of my friends back in high school, you know, kind of like, obviously in jest, but you know, it's like my dad's down at the altar every week crying. And then we get in the car and he's like, shut up, you know, like, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but what it is, you know, it's the, you just got done fighting in the car and you walk in like you're a happy family and everything is okay in your life. Mm-hmm. And it kind of goes with what I'm talking about tonight, which is Wednesday,
mm-hmm,
you know, this idea that our social, like what we put out social on socials is not us. It's not the real us. It's not the, you know, it's the perfectly posed picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had a great family vacation, but you know, that doesn't include the fight you just had last night because everyone was tired, or, you know, the person throwing up in the bathroom because they, mm-hmm, ate bad clams, mm-hmm, or something, you, mm-hmm, know, like,
yeah,
you don't put that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this idea that we should speak with integrity is that there should not be a difference between who we are to the world and who we are behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
We should be the same person. And sometimes that means looking like a bad Christian, you know. That was one of the things I liked about the band Emery. You know, they have a podcast called Bad Christian Podcast.
Yeah, I've watched that, yeah.
And so, you know, the idea is that, like, they're saying, we're not good Christians, but we are Christians, you know, like, we struggle and we have, mm-hmm, and so it's like, you know, we don't have to portray ourselves as holy. And in fact, that is what has caused, I think, a lot of the discourse from the perspective of outside the church, because it's like, well, you're so put together, you're so whatever, but then you do these things on the side. Well, that's because the real person is the one on the side.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the person that looks holy and whatever. It's the person on the side that screws up and has these issues and has these vices and whatever. And again, that goes on the topic that we talked about forever ago, like the idea of transparency, being okay with that. I am not a great Christian. Mm-hmm. I do not do everything correct. You know, a lot of times you'll ask a question like, when was the last time you picked up your Bible and, mm-hmm, nobody wants to say it? But then one person goes, yeah, it's probably been like 3 months. And then everyone's like, yeah, I haven't really touched it either, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They say misery loves company, but I think vulnerability craves company as well, because, like, yeah, you can't just be the only one that's vulnerable all the time, you know?
Yeah.
That's good.
All right, last question. When the world feels like it's on fire with chaos, uncertainty, and fear, how can Christians reflect God's peace and hope, trusting that Jesus is both returning and reigning?
You ever seen the movie The Titanic and the boat's about to sink, right? And they're like, yeah. What are we going to do?
Last concert, boys.
Let's play. Let's make sure everybody is, you know, let's play some music.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah. And they sink. I'm like, okay, I want to be that as a Christian where it's like, man, everything's going down. It's like, let's show God's peace. Let's play some music. Let's like, the boat's sinking, but we're not worried because ultimately we're headed for a better tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
And it'll be music to people's ears. Like when everybody's fighting over the election, when everybody's fighting over, or scared about, you know, bombings, when everybody's this and that and the other, and you're just like that family in that basement singing the goodness of God, and people are like, okay, well, hold on. You know, you don't have to be the one that runs into the bottom of the boat and goes, Jesus, wake up, we're gonna drown, don't you care? You could just be like, you could be more like Jesus and be like, I'm gonna take a nap. You know?
Yeah, we have to allow our peace to not be affected by like outside circumstances, because like the peace that passes all understanding does not change.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we trust that God is in control, then we should be a beacon of stability. We should be a beacon of peace no matter what, because we know that in the end, it'll all be fine. I don't know how easy that is in the circumstance. You know, like I think I've used this example so many times, but you know, the Simpsons movie, you know, the church to bar, like typically the religious people are the ones that run away from the church when something's wrong. And the people that are not religious run to the church when something's wrong. Which I think is interesting because.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. It's like,
I forgot about that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. The dome comes and all the people from the bar run to the church, and all the people from the church run to the bar.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Man, they were onto something there.
Yeah. I mean, it is so realistic that a lot of times the people that believe in God and his sovereignty decide in circumstances like that. I mean, look at the disciples, right? They were hiding.
Yeah. They're out of there.
Yeah. They were like, well, he's dead. So we're just going to hide because they're going to come after us. Like it was the women that were like, it's going to be fine. Yeah. you know, but it's like that idea of like, I don't know if it's going to be okay. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I've got peace, but like, is the peace strong enough for this? Like,
well, imagine. Well, and then look at the boldness that they went from hiding to being martyred after one simple truth. Christ is risen. Right? Like, whoa, this guy beats death, gives us resurrection power. You didn't see that fear afterward. You saw the opposite of that. You saw freedom, liberty, Stephen stoned to death, right? And saw Jesus and was like, it's like, I got you, right? Yeah. That's the kind of boldness and peace that we have. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, we've only got a couple more messages in this series.
Yeah, we're talking
three
about
more, right?
Prayer and healing and the sick and
two more.
We got two more.
Two more, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Prayer and healing, and then after that, restoring wayward wanderers.
I'm so excited for that message. That's like just my favorite like topic. That
restoration, man. When people. And we're going to get into the prodigal son, and the lost sheep. And if we don't sing Reckless Love that day, I'm rioting.
Bobby. Yeah. yeah, it's, I mean, I'm excited because, you know, we have planned out till Easter and I'm very excited about where we're headed. Obviously, you know, we're going back to Matthew and so it's planned out, but just the way that things are laying out, it's going to be so good. It's going to be powerful and, you know, like, and it, I don't know, like Christmas and it's just going to be great.
We're in a good season. Yeah. I don't know if, I mean, I guess probably don't even, most people don't even think about this, but like our church is packed with people like on Sunday mornings. And so keep digging in, not because I want a bunch of people in a room, but because when there's more people in the room, there's more power in the room. There's more accountability. There's more connection. There's all that stuff. And
yeah,
it, you know, Hebrews says, don't neglect the gathering together all the more as the day is drawing near. And if we really, truly believe that Jesus is coming soon, the church should grow and grow and grow with believers that are excited to
get your butt here.
So please come to church on Sunday.
Yeah. So if you would love to check us out, we're located in Carlinville, Illinois, and our services are at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. Or if you would love to watch us online, we'd love to have you. And we'll see you tomorrow on the stream or in person.